Bienvenidos a Panorama Comunitario a través de Radio Fiesta 96.9 FM 1380M. Tenemos para ustedes una entrevista muy interesante el día de hoy. Nos visita Deb Jenkins, que es el presidente de los conservadores responsables precisamente por una administración mejor en cuanto a lo que se denomina la utilización de la energía y de los recursos. Él es el presidente de Conservative for Responsible Stewardship. Vamos a darle la bienvenida. Mr. Jenkins, welcome. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Mr. Jenkins, it's very important just to talk about these topics, but I would like to let you introduce yourself about what exactly is to be president of the Conservative for Responsible Stewardship.
Well, our organization is pretty much what it says. We're an organization of conservatives who care about the environment and conservation and being good stewards of God's creation. And we have about 20,000 members nationwide, and we have over 6,000 members in Florida. We've been concerned with issues such as climate change and clean energy, and Florida's sort of behind in dealing with those things, and so we've had a little extra focus on Florida in recent months.
Mr. Jenkins, let's talk about some energy, because it's a very, very interesting topic. Vamos a hablar un poquito acerca precisamente de la energía, que es un tópico muy interesante. My question is, the energy at this point, the energy market, how we can understand, how we can divide what's going on, because a lot of people are against some things like fracking, for example, but another ones are in favor. Can you explain to us how this works?
Yeah, well, the energy market has changed dramatically over the last few years, and that's because primarily, two things. One is the price of solar energy has come down a lot. It's actually now cheaper than other forms of energy, and they pair that with battery storage now, so that you can even use solar energy at nighttime. But at the same time, the price of coal-fired and natural gas-fired electricity generation has gone up, because those plants are getting older, and a lot of them are 30, 40, 50 years old. And as they get older, the maintenance cost and operating cost of those plants increase, which means the electricity cost from those plants increases. So we've been seeing the price of power from coal and gas rise in price, and the price of power from solar decline. And a lot of folks are operating on information they've heard, in the last 5, 10, 15 years, and they don't realize that the market has changed that much. And the problem is that if the utilities don't adjust to this changing market, utility customers, all of us that use electricity, end up paying higher electricity prices. And that's one thing that's happening in Florida right now, where FPNL, Duke, and TECO, all three of the monopoly utilities there, are asking the Public Utility Commission for for rate increases. In other words, they're asking for permission to raise electricity prices. And in FPNL's case, it looks like that they're trying to raise it about 18% in one fell swoop. One of the big reasons that's happening is that those companies are not diversified enough with the lowest cost energy source, which is now solar. Just to show you how bad Florida is sort of behind here, is that Florida currently gets about, less than 3% of its electricity from solar, whereas Vermont gets 14% of its electricity from solar. Now, how is it that little tiny Vermont, way up north, gets more of its power from solar than the Sunshine State? It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, Mr. Jenkins, just information in our community. Let me ask you this. Is the pandemic itself
Can you repeat that?
The pandemia caused any kind of impact on this energy market or no?
I still didn't understand the first part. Sorry.
The question is about the pandemic, the coronavirus.
Oh, the pandemic. Yes. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Well, the pandemic has definitely reduced the amount of energy being used in like the transportation sector, like automobiles on our highways and stuff. But it hasn't really decreased the use of electricity, in homes and businesses that much because people have been inside a lot more. But one thing that's important to know is that climate change has actually worsened the pandemic in states like Florida because, you know, they the conventional wisdom was that when it got warm in the summer, that the infection from the pandemic would go down because people would be outdoors more and less likely to transmit the virus. But last summer, what happened was Florida was under a heat wave. It was hot. It was humid. The heat index was over 105 degrees for a record number of days. So when you have that kind of oppressive heat, it doesn't drive people outdoors. It drives people indoors. So just like when it's, in the teens or zeros up in the north in the wintertime, people stay indoors. Well, we're seeing that people are staying more indoors in the south now because in the summer, it just gets oppressively hot.
That's right. Absolutely. I agree with you. That happened during the last few months. But Mr. Jenkins, can you talk about the new legislation, the SB 856 and the SB 839? What do you think about it?
Can you repeat that one more time?
Can you talk about the legislation? The state lawmakers will introduce the legislation SB 856 and
SB 839. Oh, okay, yeah. Yes. Those bills are really scary. Actually, the numbers have changed recently. Those bills are now. Let's see. What are they? Give me just a second. Sorry. Bill numbers are 1128, Senate Bill 1128, and House Bill 919. And something happened in the legislature where the numbers changed from what they originally were. But those bills, they seek to let the state preempt localities, in other words, towns and counties and cities, from making any kind of rules or regulations or goals or anything else related to energy. Tampa wanted to incentivize new buildings that don't use so much natural gas and things like that. And so what happened was utilities like Tampa Electric, TECO, they decided that they didn't want to leave their fortunes up to what localities wanted, and they went and they lobbied the legislature to try to get the legislature to preempt localities from making their own energy rules. And to us, this is just, there's nothing conservative about this at all, because as conservatives, we've always heard that the best government is the government that's closest to the people.
Exactly.
Because it better reflects what the local folks want. And if you take the power out of the localities and you give it to the state, then you got the folks up in Tallahassee making decisions for everyone, even if their needs or desires are different. And we don't think that's right. And we think folks should let their state senators and state representatives know that they don't want this to happen.
But Mr. Jenkins, how, for example, people is listening in detail what you say today, but the question is, how we can We defy against the Florida's monopoly utilities. What do we have to do? What do people have to do?
Well, like I said, they have to really make their voices heard to the decision makers, the people their elected representatives in the state house and the state senate and Governor DeSantis's office as well. And you know, people have a lot more power than they think. It's just that a lot of times people just don't use that power. But if you're someone, especially if you're someone who is like on the, you know, in Florida, the Republicans are in charge of the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion. So if you're a Republican and you you've been active in campaigning and you or fundraising or anything like that, or just vote Republican, then if you go to your elected representative, you say, look, I voted for you, or look, I helped table at your event, or I helped raise money for you, and I don't want this to happen. If they hear from enough folks that say that, then we can stop stuff like this.
Mr. Jenkins, for example, all these situations with the new lawmakers introducing legislations about this, the only 3% of the power from solar energy is in this state, in Florida. The question is, all the way this is something political, they are handling this in a political arena?
Well, political, you can help it in the political arena by some states have adopted clean energy standards where they say that the utilities in that state have to get a certain percentage of their electricity from clean sources, whether it's solar, wind, or nuclear, by a certain date. Like, for example, the state of Nevada enacted a law with 100% Republican support, by the way, that said that their utility had to get 50% of its electricity from renewables by 2030. That's only 9 years away. Florida doesn't have anything like that. So the utilities get to do whatever they want to. And when you're a monopoly utility, you see, even though solar is cheaper, that market reality is not affecting how you do business because they have a captive customer base. In other words, if you're a customer for Florida Power and Light, you can't say, oh, well, this company has a cheaper electricity price, I'm going to go to them. You're stuck. You're stuck with Florida Power and Light, or you're stuck with TECO, or you're stuck with Duke, and you can't change that. So to the utilities, when they have a captive audience, they don't care what the price of electricity is, as long as the Public Service Commission will allow them to raise your electricity prices so that it covers that and they still make a profit. So the two things that can help change that is, one, the standard I talked about earlier, if the legislature would do that. The other is if the Public Service Commission would simply say, no, we're not going to let you raise electricity prices because you're not diversified enough in solar. So if you want to keep making a profit, you better start investing in the lowest cost energy and passing those savings on to your customers.
Mr. Jenkins, we have a new administration in the United States. What do you think will be, from this administration, the approach to this matters, to these problems? Do you think there will be some kind of change, or we continue to try in different ways, of course legal ways, to advance in a better comprehensive in a better way to understand what's going on?
Yeah, well, there's going to be change. I mean, clearly the Biden administration does not see these issues the same way that the Trump administration did. The Trump administration, unfortunately, was operating in sort of a backward-looking energy policy that didn't really recognize the current realities. And, you know, I think that was large part because they had the fossil fuel industry in their ear all the time, telling them what they need to think. The Biden administration is not going to do that, but they could go wrong in the other direction because there's, you know, the proposals like the Green New Deal and stuff like that are so broad and sweeping, and they really sort of ignore the market. And for conservatives, we like to go with the market and leverage the market to solve problems. And this is the perfect time to leverage the market to solve problems, because when you can lower people's electricity cost and help the climate problem at the same time, because that's what the market is telling you to do, then following the market makes sense. I worry that on the left, they don't understand that market power enough and don't utilize it, and they don't focus enough on targeted solutions that are just targeted specifically to the problem. But then on the political right, you have folks that are sort of operating in with old information, where they think that somehow that they can restore coal or something like that back, when coal is not winning on price. So utilities going forward are not going to be building any new coal plants, no matter what you do. The political right needs to sort of come into the present in terms of the current market realities and truly try to solve these problems by leveraging the market. And the left needs to work with, to try to find common ground with Republicans on targeted solutions, instead of trying to do these big, huge, sweeping things that, you know, at least threaten to turn our economy sort of on its head.
CRS is a non-for-profit organization. You say, you talk about some solutions. Can you name a few of those, Mr. Jenkins? What would be some real effective solutions in this situation?
Well, certainly solutions for climate. there's a couple. I think the two big ones are, you know, either carbon pricing, which is that, you know, you put a price on carbon emissions, on, you're basically putting a price on pollution, and incentivizing things that don't pollute, and that helps drive progress. The other way to go about it is on a state-by-state basis, where the states themselves require utilities to get more and more of their energy from clean sources. And either one of those approaches can actually solve the problem. It's just that each one takes, you know, a little bit of political will, either political will at the state level or political will, you know, in Congress. And it also takes bipartisanship. You know, Ronald Reagan said that preserving our environment is not a partisan challenge. It's common sense. And he was so right. This is common sense. This is stuff we should all be trying to solve these problems together. It shouldn't be political. It shouldn't be polarized. We all have to live in the same planet. If we all want to live here have our quality of life the same, you know, look at Florida. Florida is having huge impacts from climate already, from climate change. And, you know, there was a time when it was all computer models that was predicting this stuff that, you know, people had a reason to be skeptical, but now you just have to walk out your door or look out your window, and you know, everything from the citrus greening disease that has hurt the citrus industry in Florida, which is actually happens because Florida's winters are staying warmer, and this insect that spreads the disease is allowed to survive. Or we talk about hurricanes and Dorian, for example, a year and a half ago, that just devastated sections of the Bahamas with, you know, 185 miles an hour winds, and it set over Grand Bahama for 24 hours straight. When it moved off, it was like a nuclear bomb had went off. Everything was leveled, completely flat. I mean, think about if that happened over a major urban area in Florida. We don't want to, every hurricane season, we don't want to be playing Russian roulette. We need to work to solve the problem. The drinking water supplies in Florida, you know, salt water's seeping into the aquifers in southern Florida, in the freshwater aquifers, and contaminating them. So all these problems you know, it's much better to prevent them through policies that try to address the problem than trying to adapt to them, which usually costs a lot with in terms of new infrastructure and things like that that are going to be tax burdens, you know, for forever. For our, even our great-great-grandchildren will be paying for these problems in the future.
Mr. Dave Jenkins, we really appreciate your time. What is the last message you will send to our community, the Spanish community, in listening to you in Palm Beach County?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, be active, care about these issues, and make your voice heard to your representatives, because we have to all pitch in together and make this change. And if we've got people on the right and the left, both understanding the same problem and trying to work towards solutions, we can solve the problem. If we don't, we're going to be in trouble. If you want to know more about our organization and what we're doing, you can visit www.conservativestewards.org.
Mr. David Jenkins, President of the Conservative for Responsible Stewardship, thank you very much to be with us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.